to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. Like, what's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed, indeed. Indeed it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact that we're all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. Protonic Weekend Edition. Weekend Edition, baby. That's right. I don't always do this. What I do is always for something special. It's coming up in a few minutes. Going to be talking to Mr. Michael Hampton of Parliament Funkadelic. Hello. So very excited about that. Very excited for that discussion. Before we do that, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. Rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 465. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding, protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. If you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. It's just a darn nice thing to do. Okay, so Neutron news. Again, West Coast tour. Later this month of August, San Francisco, Sacramento, Eureka, Portland, Seattle, and then L.A. for Catterwall West, Permanent Records. Also just announced Detroit, Milwaukee, and Minneapolis in September. NeutronFriends.com for all that business. Come out. I got stickers, you know, for the show. Come on out for that. But you're not here to hear me opine about what I'm doing. We're here to talk about a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member, a legendary player in one of the most unique bands, not just in music, but in world building, stagecraft, what have you. He's put out a bunch of awesome mini albums, including a new one called King Kong that I quite enjoy. And look, without any further ado, well, a little ado, I guess, Mr. Michael Hampton, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Conan. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, this is it's an honor because I'm a big fan of your style, and I say that as someone that like I you know when I learned who Eddie Hazel was, I was like, oh my god, that guy's great, and I was like wow, imagine being the guy after that.
I'm still learning stuff from that, yeah.
But I love that you know you first of all. You have your own style and your own thing that very much comes across. And I'm thinking about even when you're doing different stuff, like these little mini albums you did, the King Kong album. I'm thinking of specifically that just came out, but also all the other ones. Like it sounds like you. And I've talked to my friend Zach Blair. He does this show. He's been on the show as well, called Anti-Heroes, like Guitar Heroes, but we're the anti-heroes, right?
Sure.
And one of the best things I think a guitar player can have is when you just can hear someone and be like, ah, I know who that is. You know, you don't even need to look at the credits. You know exactly who they are.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think you got that.
Yeah.
And I'm just so curious. You started young, man. And you like, can you, you've probably told the story 1,000 times, but you haven't told it to me. So could you just tell me how that all started with P-Funk?
Okay. It was, I had been practicing on my own
for a while, and then I had one teacher, John DiCiro. He's a jazz guy, you know. He taught me a lot of technique. It was just for a brief period, like maybe a month, 3 months maybe, and then couldn't afford the lessons. But I had been self-taught just before I'd seen him, you know, and I just took what I try to remember what he taught me, the Mel Bay books, you know, and all that. But trying to play, getting in the groove, it was I had been playing songs for my friends, and they'd bring over albums. I'd borrow the albums, you know, be a Funkadelic album or any number of albums, you know, Deep Purple or Led Zeppelin, trying to pick different pieces out the album and play along with the album. And that's what we did. We just sat around, you know, and thought we were cool drinking some beers and playing, you know, me trying to play some guitar and stuff. Until some other people, some of my friends, you know, start picking up some instruments. But one of the guys ran into was on the east side of Cleveland. He knew the band. And he took my cousin and I to a concert at Public Hall in Cleveland there. And it was Bloodstone. I think they had Take to the Sky on a Natural High, a hit record. And then Funkadelic was Standing on the Verge, I believe. And then he threw the after party for the band when they came through town. And they happened to come over when we had our equipment set up over his house. And they heard me play Ragged Brain there. And like 2 weeks after that, I think Eddie Hayes on Billy Bass, they may have went to Motown. So at about the same time that Shaky Ground and Living in the Glass House, you could tell those styles on there, their styles on the Temptation songs. And then there was a guy in Michigan that had a bad acid trip, I heard. And somehow fell in my, you know, they Tiki Football caused me to come to Maryland to do the Capitol Center. It was sold out there. And after that, it just kind of wasn't like it wasn't like a tryout, you know. It was just like an after party. They seen me, and then some things happened, and you know, and they called me like to fill in, just to do. I used to just do Maggot Brain and step to the side, and until I learned the rest of the set.
But I mean, what a song! Because I think Maggot Brain specifically, it was a great record too. But like the song Maggot Brain. Not only is it just one of, in my opinion, one of the best, like, just guitar exploration songs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that does such a specific and unique thing. Mm-hmm. It's on a very rare group, team, playlist of songs that justify being over 10 minutes. Like, but, you never get tired of it, yeah, right? Because it transports you. It takes you someplace.
Sure.
And I remember first time I heard it, I was like, wow, what the hell is this? Like, I didn't know it was Parliament. I didn't know anything other than the guy's like, this is cool. What is this? Mm-hmm. And what a song to have be your entry point. Yeah. Because it's also his signature song, man. I mean, it's like when people think of like, oh, he's a badass, Maggot Brain, man.
Yeah.
And how old are you when all this is going down?
Well, at the time that I did that concert, it was 17. I had just graduated.
Jesus H. Christ.
You know, high school there. And then
I was reading comic books.
Yeah. You read comic books. I was like, Me too. I thought that somewhere I was, you know, somewhere between comic books and, you know, trying to drive.
Yeah. You know. So that world, you know, I mean, that's no joke. They have a whole like built universe around like what they're doing. You know, show wise, there's like 1,000 people in the band. You know, was that just. Yeah, what did that feel like at the time, getting dropped into that?
Well, I mean, I never really, you know, you hear about people running away to join the circus.
Right, yeah, of course.
It's like, I wasn't running away or anything. I was just like, oh, man, I got a, you know, opportunity to play. And I knew my parents would understand. I called them back after I did this first gig because it was my first plane ride, and my first flight going to do this gig. And then there's a picture, if you see it, it's at the Capitol Center when it was there, you know.
Yeah.
And it was the gate behind us was where they did the load in for the equipment. And that was when I started for real, because I was in this group picture, which was like, I guess that's what you pass out to when you're touring. It's like, this is how the band looks. This is how the band looks. And then it changed over the years. But yeah, that was a key thing. I had a big afro at the time.
Sure.
And I think they had a costume rack. Everybody would just that they would just pick, you know, well, you like this, you like this, you like this. So I ended up with a cape or something.
Well, yeah, and that's probably like, you know, the fourth most garish thing happening on stage right in a given moment in time. Because one of the things that I always, as a younger man, that I kind of got into with Bartleman and Funkadelic is like the mythology of it. Like, was sort of like, oh, there's this like world that's happening here. Right. And, you know, you got, you know, this man's in a diaper. Like, they got, like, these people over here, like, you know, like just voguing.
Yeah, the fencing mask. And I was like, what's the Saturday Night Live? Keenan. And he just, what's up with that?
Yeah.
Kind of reminds of that skit, you know? It's got everybody's like doing something, you know? And it's all part of one thing, part of one team, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is, even though this, I guess, was like circus-like element, it also is like everyone's very much aligned to a goal. Yeah. And what you're hearing, like, it was one of my first experiences hearing kind of groove-oriented music. In that capacity, that wasn't just, you know, like, oh, here's some guys and they're playing and it's great, which is awesome. I love stuff like that. Sure. But the show was this crazy thing, which is like, oh my God. And then thinking about it, you know, later on, it's like, well, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of things like that for black folks. I mean, I guess you got Sun Ra, right? But I mean, that's about it, you know?
Exactly. Right.
I grew to appreciate on a different level of just like, God dang, there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, and everybody was, I guess at the time with Parliament and the Funkadelic Unite, you know, I heard that the Parliaments couldn't keep the suits, you know, like everybody trying to, you forgot your tie, or you forgot we got to be matching, you know, like somebody forgot this, or somebody got that. And it was easier just to be like, okay, we're in the hotel room, or, you know, and I'm sure George, somebody thought of it, but he was wearing that sheet, you know.
Yeah.
He probably, you know, and then Gary was wearing the diaper. That was out of a Holiday Inn towel, you know. and then he would just put some holes in the side of the towel and get a belt from somewhere, and then he had a costume, you know.
Oh, there you go.
And it just looked funny, like the Marvin and the Martian or something. You know?
Well, yeah.
with the tennis shoes and the diaper, you know.
I mean, it's a look. It's a strong look. No one's going to forget it. That's for sure.
Funk, you know, and I mean, it's just style came from just about anything, and you know, anything you can find. It's still one of the fun things about the group or dressing that comes to mind is that, you know, if you're backstage, you say, oh, man, I forgot my outfit.
Yeah.
And
what do we got?
You, yeah.
There's a curtain over here. There's a hat.
You think about it a little bit. You could, exactly. You could think of something. Yeah,
MacGyver curtain, something exactly. Together. Yeah.
The lampshade. Don't forget the lampshade.
Well, and it also, it appealed to my sensibility as well as a lot of people, because if you were someone that was like into comic books, it looks like, you know, the Avengers or like the X-Men or something like that. You know, it's a Justice League. It's like everyone's got their own thing going on, but they're a total badass at what they do. And, you know, not always exactly the same. People got kind of come in, come out, you know, but.
Yeah, I love the cape because it's easier. You're not in. Want to be like, oh man, I gotta go dress and I gotta change my outfit, and it's got a cape from Casual Corner, and then I love the sci-fi, you know, like The Fly and all that. So I got a fencing mask, you know, and put the cloak over it, and you know, platform start going crazy with Kiss and all that, and then you know, change later on with the sombrero later. It's just depending on whatever rode into the dressing room. certain cities, you know, when the Broadway plays and all that stuff, and some of those places where we played would just have the closet, you know, for when they used to do plays, and as long as we put the stuff back, it was okay to, you know, to borrow it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun, right? Like it's a fun show, and there was nothing else going on, like remotely like that performance. And it was inclusive too. That's the other thing, is it was like, well, I may not know what's going on, but I feel pretty welcome.
Yeah, and a lot of people in the audience, basically, when they start saying I'm with the band, they would look like they were with the band for real.
They got some crazy outfit going on. Like, yeah, plausible.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, they would be looking like they're more in the band than I am. It's like, nah, man, you ain't in the band. It's like, because you don't look crazy enough.
Yeah, exactly. You need a sombrero and an ascot or something.
Yeah. It's ostrich feathers. You know?
Exactly. Well, and it's something where if it was just the live show, you know, the band would be legendary, because there was just literally nothing like that. And honestly, still kind of isn't. Like, there's some bands that, like, do some aspect of it, right?
Sure.
But not in that same... I mean, honestly, it would be kind of impossible to pull off without it to seem like, I know what you're doing. Yeah, fine. Sure. I know P-Funk, too.
Yeah.
But then also there's the musical aspect of it. So it was Let's Take It to the Stage, right, is the first one. That was like 75. That's the first one that you – is that the first one that you did the recording on?
Where, yeah, like my first sessions were was a stretching out, which
– Oh, right,
wound,
okay.
Yeah. It wound up on Bootsy's You Rubber Band album. And then Be My Beach – was on the Let's Take It to the Stage album.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it was the same day. It was the same session. That's what we did, you know, just go in the studio and record a lot of tracks, and you never knew who was going to get what track on what,
right.
What group, you know, what they would produce on what group.
Because that's the other thing with the mythology is that there's all these like offshoots, like, you know, there's the P-Funk All-Stars, Bootsy's Rubber Band, you know, Brides of Funkenstein, the Horny Horns, and it's all just one kind of conglomerate of like creativity, and then, you know, it gets like divvied up here, that, okay, that's over here, that's over there, what have you.
Everybody planned on each other's sessions, you know, this is a good melting pot of some funk gumbo going on.
Right, exactly. Yeah, everyone just, all right, put it on, you know. Was that, had you recorded before? Like, did you record at that point, or was that the first one?
No, that was it. You know, I never really did any a session worker or anything like that before I got with the group. And other than, you know, you get your cassette player.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, I mean,
and then you record the band and it's too loud. It just sounds like a hiss. It's like, yes.
Yeah, anyway. It sounds great.
I can hear what it is, you know. It's the sessions started when I got with, you know, up in Detroit,
right?
United Sound, and then it would be basically wherever they, you know, we might wind up in a studio somewhere else, but most of it. Or mostly all of it that I was messing around with was at United Sound up in Michigan there, up in Detroit.
And what was the songwriting process at that time? I mean, was it just like anything goes? Was it all over the place? Was it
pretty much?
Okay, yeah. It kind of feels like that would be the vibe.
You know, that it's like I suppose the older. The older members, you know, they were used to writing, like the guys who were in Parliament, you know, like Fuzzy and Calvin and George and Grady and Ray. It's just like they had songwriting techniques, you know, and people, songwriting teams, I guess, you know, like, and since it was up there in Motown and it was, I guess it's a technique to it, but I never went to any college school or it wasn't something that they passed on to me. It's like, yo, this is how you do a song, and this is the chorus, this is the refrain. You know, it should only be 3 minutes long, you know, or whatever it is, you know. And then if it's not happening, you know, that's not a good feeling. But you shouldn't give up on that out. You know, people that get into writing, it's like not everybody just hears the same thing, but it's that kind of, I got away from it. But, you know, I just, if they did a track and everybody was with whatever track it was, and a lot of people, it's almost like voting on it, you know, and then we after they listened to something, they said, we'll put such and such on that, we'll put Mike on this, right, and we'll put this Fred Wesley on that, or Bootsy on this one, or, you know, or they might start the foundation of it, and then you just, but it was the older members that usually did the tracks first.
Is someone like coming in with like, you know, bass line or a keyboard part and be like, hey, y'all, goes like this, and like just playing it, or?
Exactly, yeah, like, and I wasn't there. A lot of times for that one, at times I would be there, you know, like if I was early in the sessions, because we had it was a hotel across from the studio. Mm-hmm. And so we basically were living at the studio, sleep at the hotel, go back over, you know, sit around, hang out at the studio. Okay, something comes up, and then if you go back, and you have an idea, and then one idea leads to another idea, and it's like, do you really feel that strongly about it? Then it surfaces, you know. I just never really. I mean, everything it had to be pretty bad to be like, oh man, that sucks. We're not playing this, are we?
Like someone blasting out a fart or something, you know. Yeah, ooh, that ain't good.
Okay, session's over. That's it.
Yeah, we're done.
Instead of airing this out. So that was really funky, man. We're just going to record that and leave, you know. A lot of it, everybody had great ideas, you know.
And was it something where, is it kind of... is it jammed out and then recorded, or is it something where, you know, you like get the parts like, oh, let's start with this and then we'll just see what goes when we're recording?
Yeah, it jams out first, and then it may be something later on when they write some lyrics or something like that, yeah. You know, because yeah. either the lyrics might come first, or the lyric comes with the track, you know, with the line, and then improvise on that. But it would change, you know. I mean, if something had to be enhanced or brought out, then you know, just like, okay, double this line or triple this line or whatever. Yeah. And it was an ongoing process, yeah. It's like, and then you can imagine everybody having a good time, kind of like.
Oh, sure.
It was real serious when it started. I mean, serious all the time, but at the same time, it's the day would just change, you know. Like, you could start having your coffee in the morning and everybody's, you know, okay, let's do it like this. And then it was just about afternoon, it changes. And by the time it's 3 a.m, it's something else.
Right, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's like, let's listen to that again. You know?
And then you're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, you know, that's you know, there's, well, I could do this on that. And then next, you're down, exactly. down the rabbit hole, like they say, right?
Yeah, sometimes it's just too much, you know. I mean, you know, it's and you have to take stuff out. So
I would imagine, like, that was probably the most work of just like, you know, there's too much. There's like, what's the filter? Like, where are you? Because the thing is, you know, when you're in the moment, like, yeah, let's add this, let's add that, let's add this other thing. And that's, you know, oh my God, there's like no room for anything.
Exactly. Yeah, what is the song? And even though not a lot of people talk about it, and I found out later on that Maggot Brain was sort of like that, you know. It was I call it like a studio, the studio baby, you know. But a studio that was created more like in a studio with the tape splicing and
you know
it was a lot of great parts that Eddie did, and but then it was, you know, George producing it and the engineers, you know, and there's a lot of people who was involved with it, and it had a whole bunch of instruments, you know, it was a lot more in it for it to come out where it, you know, where it came out, you know, as a final, okay, this is Maggot Brain. It's like it's almost like an orchestrated thing.
Right. Well,
it was a lot of things on there.
Props for that, and for knowing, hey, why don't we just, you know, take all this kind of out, and like, this is good on its own. Like, this can just carry its own. And what a strong decision. Because think about, and I'm thinking, I won't call anyone out, but I mean, we've all heard records like, yeah, that's great, but it's like, it's kind of exhausting after a while, you know? Yeah. Nothing about that ever gets exhausting. It's cool, man. And it's in that way. In that way, it's almost kind of like some of the jazz guys or something.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. While being also distinctly of the band and of the player.
Sure.
And that's a, boy, that's a fine balance beam to walk, I tell you.
Yeah, Eddie and I planned, we played together when he came back, and we'd sit in and we played together, and it's like, because he knew what I didn't know till later on about what I just said about the recording. And he knew it, and he would start it off, and he only would do like about 4 measures, you know. So he wasn't gonna, he didn't do the whole, like, I try to remember what was in the studio and trying to get parts and stuff. And because he knew how it was done, I believe he used to just go out, do the 4 bars, and just go to the stratosphere. He'd start. And so he didn't have a, like me when I, before I got, or thought I would ever be out with any group, I would like to hear the band sound like the record. You know what I mean? Like, I'm listening to Maggot Brain, or I'm listening to something at home over and over, or whatever it is, you know. I'm like, when I go to the concert, I wanted to hear it like that or better. And if I hear like somebody just hit like one note, you know, something. And then just go to Stratosphere. He's like, okay, well, he's the guy that did it. And I was like, okay, well, I had to talk to Eddie, and I don't know how we came about it. We was cool, you know, and he let me talk him into starting it first. I said, well, you start it first, and then I'll come in after you.
Right.
And then so he got his improvs off, and then I started off just like it was the top of the record again. You know,
so you get kind of the best of both worlds. It's like a conversation almost, right?
And then we'd meet up at the end and you know, kind of, you know, just go at it.
It
was at points that I listened, and I was like, I couldn't even hear the notes. They just disappeared into, like, what were we playing?
Right, yeah, because you're so deep in it. Like, it's not even, like... It registers as music anymore. It's like you're feeling it.
It was just meet on some notes here and there, but I miss Eddie.
It's cool.
Miss a lot of the guys that's out there. It's even having something for a friend of mine now. But yeah, we won't keep going on. That's what it's about, huh? Just gotta keep going. You know.
Yeah. Well, and then also keep creating. You know, keep exactly. Moving it forward.
Sure.
I think that it's, I mean, it's like, what was it, 92 he died? Like, it was still,
I kind of don't even, when it comes to, I mean, I get all that, yeah, like, you know, I get primeval and religious and a bunch of different things, you know, come to mind, and they all combine into like this, I just get zen or something, and like, I can't remember when anybody passed. Did they even pass? I don't know.
Are they still around? Maybe they're still around.
Like, I think they're still here, man. Wait.
They called me yesterday. Like, yeah.
They got time travel now. Let's just do it, you know.
It is. And it's something where, you know, I'm starting to get the age that, you know, that's happening with me. Like, folks that I played with are like, oh, yeah, they're gone. Oh, they're gone, too. And it's like, geez. Feels like they're still here somehow.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. If you think about it, it's probably all in that. And the imagination and the head and us. I try to, I'm still trying to find some licks that he did. And the closer I get to that, the more I feel like I know him a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's some people out there that you miss, you know. You can always try to play exactly what they were playing. Or you can try, you know.
You can sure try, yeah, exactly.
You can try, you can get a little closer.
Well, and he had such a unique voice. And even when he was, you know, he's playing with the Temptations for a bit, too. It's like,
He could have been in the Temptations, I suppose. If he got into the steps and
getting the moves.
Yeah.
I was like, well, he's got the skills, but he's got to get the moves down.
A lot of musicians, including me, don't dance. You know.
Yeah, it's an important thing.
Every time I start dancing, it's like, that's all right, Mike. Stick to guitar, bro. go back to school. Go to dance school later. You know.
As a dancer, you make a great guitar thrang. Which, you know, there's worse things in life. No, but it's something where, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's cool that even when he left the band, you know, there's still like a relationship there, you know, come back, like do some stuff, you know, like that's sort of the creativity wins the day. Over all the rest of it, right? So I always find that enheartening, where it's like, okay, well, we can get past, like, you know, money problems or whatever, or whatever it was. Yeah.
Hey, if somebody's part of something, it's really, we're all, you know, we're all one when it comes to that. You know, it's like when I wasn't out or I missed a show or something like that, and when he was gone or when people would, like, but not on the mix or on the roster or whatever. It's like, it's still with the team, you know?
Yeah.
It's some kind of way, you know? So it's always, you can always come back home.
Yeah, it was at Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. Hey, you know, that really, there was a lot of Hotel Californias happening at that time.
Yeah, I'm sure. So Tales of Kid Funkadelic, that's the one where, you know, a couple of those songs you had been playing, they were live staples at that point, right? And you get to figure out what a song is live, and then you get to record it, which is a different vibe, right?
Yeah, they didn't tour, you know, like some groups go, you know, they put an album out, and then you do the tunes off of the album, you know, like you're promoting the album, you know.
Yeah.
And then it would still be the older stuff, like the Cosmic Slops and the Red Hot Mama, you know, to go, and we go back to that Flashlight, what have you. But yeah, it's hard to say. I kind of lost track of train of thought. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's fine. I was just talking about, like, you know, some of the songs where it's like, if you get to play them live and kind of feel them out as live songs first before recording them, right? That's a slightly different process.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what you mean. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's what I missed. But yeah, we got about as close to doing the licks in the hotel room, or we might do them over and over in the actual studio.
Yeah.
You know, and get it just good enough. You know, it wasn't a real precise thing, even though some people were pretty particular. Of if Bootsy was doing something, he was pretty, he's pretty, not say strict, but he liked for it to be tight, just like James Brown.
Yeah, exactly. No, for sure. And that's, that comes across in all that he does. You know, even when he's like doing a guest shot or something, it's like, he is.
The rhythm line that he gave me for the stretching out, that's all, you know, it's all he wanted me to play.
Yeah.
It's that little rhythm line, you know, or the rhythm chord. And I didn't have time to learn the whole arrangement.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Know? Yeah.
Yeah, it would have took a, he'd have been like, no, you almost, nope, you better try it again. Nope, I was too young for that. And I mean, even now, you know, it takes a couple of tries before you, you know, some producers, they say like, I think that was it. Okay. It's like, I'd still be in the studio somewhere trying to get some licks that somebody tried to tell me how to play it, and I was like, well, I thought that was it. It sounded like it, you know, but it, for some reason, it's not translating into the sound booth or something, you know.
So sometimes it can be feel, right? Like you can have, you know, two different players play the quote unquote same thing, and somehow it's completely different.
That's exactly it, and I had to just let that go, you know, not take it personal. I was like, because I felt at one point, you know, when you're young, you're like, I got this. Oh, that's easy. Oh, that's real easy. And it seemed like the easier the line was, the more, you know, specific somebody wanted it. You know,
right,
you're
right,
like,
yeah.
Well, how did this little line turn into this?
Right. This is it. This is it.
Like 2 hours or something, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. I'm going to take a break and I'm going to come back and we'll try it again. Okay.
Well, and were you, as a younger man, were you down with that minimalist thing? Were you seeing like the musical advantage to just really laying into something simple like that? Or you're more just like, hey man, I just want to shred. I just want to go wild here.
I like the discipline, you know, and getting the lines and stuff like that. It is when it gets to that point where you feel like you got it, and somebody's not really hearing it, that can get kind of like, well, what am I hearing? You know, what am I not hearing? Or what am I not feeling? And it's like, well, when I have, going to have a sip of coffee or hit a joint or something, you know, it's okay, you know, you have a sip of this and then that's all you need to do is relax. We'll play just a little bit behind the beat. So just the communication between just one person to another as to how they want to lick, you know. I'm really easy when it comes to that, like, which probably not. It could be a good thing, could be a bad thing, but I'm probably more, I like to be tight, but I'm not overly, I don't get it. I'm not obsessed with that. I like to just go on and jam. If it's close enough, okay.
Well, because it's feel, right? Because there's something. We all know players where they're so technically proficient, like they're just they got everything, and then you listen to them play, it's like I don't feel anything.
Right.
Yeah, I don't feel a damn thing.
Got all the tech things that you want down. It's like that's tight, man, but I just don't feel it, you know. And I don't know what that is, like, you know.
Well, and it can work for anything. Look at Neil Young. Right. I mean, like, on paper, it's like that guy's terrible, but it's like he's perfect. He is the ultimate feel guitar player.
Yep. Definitely feel it.
And what he does, like, no one can come even close to like what he does. Now, is he like, you know, is he one of these notes per minute guys that's like always exactly on point? No, man, not even that isn't even the vibe.
That's not the vibe. That's exactly it. Yeah, man. It's about the vibe. That's for sure.
Well, and it's always struck me, too, just speaking a little more on the minimalism of some of this stuff, that there was kind of a cross-corollary with, you know, the world of Funkadelic and P-Funk and what have you, like Kraftwerk and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, we're exploring different ways to kind of do music by, like, not going the most maximal way, but just kind of taking it down. Mm-hmm. And in a way that, now granted, it's boogie music, right? You're meant to be dancing. But like, also, if you're just sitting there listening, like, oh, that's cool, because then when that comes back, it means more. Now this means more when it comes back. Like, now, where if it was just doing that the whole time, it'd be like, all right, it's doing that. Fine. And I've seen that arrangement style, I guess you could call it, emulated in so many ways. And I'm literally wearing a Minutemen shirt right now, right? You know, like, you know, and like bands like that, and you know, Shellac, and like bands that, like, nobody would ever put them in the same category. But it's like, no, but it's taking these ideas of creativity. Okay, you make it, you take it down, bring it back up. You know, you take it back down in this different way, and so on. And that makes it so it's a journey. It's a journey rather than an endurance contest.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Not trying to beat each other down for that. It's just,
right,
it's
everyone, like, I need trying to outdo everyone. Yeah, exactly.
I need that hit record, man. You know.
Well, and it's always interesting when you have like stuff that does kind of break bigger. It's like, huh, that one, huh?
Oh, man.
Okay. Was that ever a surprise for you, especially coming into it as you know, when you came in, there already was a, you know, there was a pretty rich history for the band, and, you know, we had some songs, you know, Flashlight, you know, the aforementioned Maga Brain, which we've gone into. We could do a Maga Brain the podcast, and I would be happy, you know, but but. Like, what hits, like, as versus, like, you know, when you're in the band versus, like, outside the band. I'm not even talking about just with the band itself, but, you know, other bands, like, using the stuff, right?
Sure.
I mean, we were just talking about the Kid Funkadelic. One of those songs was, which one was it? It was they used in that one, I'm blanking right now. but it's, like... Like, especially when people got into the sampling and stuff.
Okay, knee deep. No.
Yeah, knee deep. That's it. Thank you. Yes. And then you're like, huh.
Yeah. It was cool. And then, well, one sample part was like, you could tell that they didn't know or they didn't really care about the guitar solo.
Yeah, they took it out. Yeah, right.
Well, they was in there. As long as they just spiced the track and then the solo came together.
Yeah.
Like some Picasso pieces, something like the eye was over here and the leg was down there, you know.
Yeah, like William Burroughs cut-up style stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's not how the solo went, but it's okay. Yeah, but the track, you know, what me, myself, and I, they didn't have, at least they didn't use the solo. And then they, so it didn't matter. But, That was cool. Yeah, when it's redone or remixed, you know, you know, well, it depends on who's doing it, you know.
But yeah, because some of it's very creative, you know, it's very cool, but it's also like, it's got to be kind of a head trip sometimes to, you know, to hear stuff where it's like, huh, that's just, okay, is that just belong, that belongs to the world now? Or,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, how do you reconcile that?
I'd rather look at it like that, you know, because you got, well, people have been doing music and notes for long before us and all that, and you're like, before they got into, okay, this is mine.
Right.
No, that's my note. It's like, it's written in stone back in, you know, that was my line back in eight, you know, something AD or something.
Well, and also the context for it can change, which is the cool side of it. Now, the other side of it is you get, you know, P. Diddy just rapping over a police song, which is like, sure. Okay, what are you doing, man? Like, sure, that's just, sure. You're not even doing anything different with it. You're just, it's
yeah.
You're not even doing anything cool.
That's a good thing to kind of to flip it around and get a chance to even do it is there's a lot of things, music out there. If I don't get a chance to work with the artists, at least you could use it as an opportunity to work with other artists.
Sure, yeah.
And then it's like later on, you know, it's like, well, you know, nobody owes anybody anything. And I wasn't trying to get anything from it, but I loved the song. I wanted to put a little guitar on it or whatever I wanted to do to remix it. And I just wanted to do it because I love music and I love the song or something. Not because you like trying to, swipe the royalties or whatever.
Right, exactly. Some mercenary business.
I was, like, yeah. I was trying to feed some children, man. So I let them sample it and put it in the trunk, and they made some, you know. Anyway, I'm sorry.
So when you're, no, by all means, it's a long form show. That's what this is for. Tell me, when One Nation Under a Groove comes together, like, do you know that, like, that's one of the ones, like, so, like, sometimes you, for me, you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to kill. And sometimes you're like, oh, wow, that one, huh? Okay.
it felt really good, you know, and I love, that percussion, just percussion, just what have you, percussion. But Larry Fitangelo, when he did that the percussion thing on it, I mean, it was a lot of great little nuances, Bernie, the little Moog lines.
Yeah, man.
And then Junie was in there from Funky Worm and Ohio Players and all that. And the One Nation Under the Groove just sounded like one of those things like, wow, what if it could be like just, you know, let's get it together, you know, like one of those pivotal moments of maybe music, we are the world or some shit. You know, I don't
right.
know.
Well, or like Marvin Gaye, you know, or, you know,
yeah.
Like.
Oh, yeah, or what's going on, right? Or whatever, yeah.
And it hit both goals at once, which is the fact that it's this pretty inescapably awesome song that has, you know, it could be someone, I'm not a lyrics guy, you know, you can just enjoy the song. But then you hear about, this incredible message of like unity and like, you know, kind of being the best of all things and what have you. And, you know, I mean, it's not like, not to be rude or anything, but it wasn't exactly, you know, Funkadelic wasn't exactly known for high-minded political messaging necessarily.
Sure.
You know, and unless there was butt involved, in which case.
Yeah. Said, what the butt resuscitation is.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And it was like, no words to that at all. It's just going to go back. But
now there's anything wrong with that, to be that. Fair. Yeah.
The lyrics, I mean, if I listen to it over again, and I don't know where the lyrics, where they were headed with the lyrics, you know, thinking about things that, all of us go through is like, you know, so wide, can't get around it, so low, can't get under it, all of that, you know, and it's like
a Zen Cohen or something,
yeah, and it's,
you know?
Like, yeah. And then the Junies just says something like, dance, sugar. You know, like, he's like, you could you can dance your way out of all of this bull, all of this audio constrictions. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's might have to learn how to do a couple of steps just to get that thing off. Right. Because they get off me, get that monkey off my back, you know?
Yeah, so, man. But that had resonance though. It had resonance. I mean, I think it's to this day the most commercially successful record. I mean, that hit like number one on Billboard, right? Also, I'm just thinking about it being in the when Rolling Stone did that 500 greatest songs of all time list, compilation, what have you. That gets ears on it. Otherwise, I wouldn't get on. And they're like, "Oh man, this is cool." And then like, "Oh man, you got no idea. There's a whole universe beyond this."
There's one that slipped through, you know.
but yeah, it has this saliency that culturally means something to people beyond the nerds, right? Sure, like the people that are just really into the records and really into, you know, music, such as myself. And it's always fascinating to me, not only when that happens, that's always fascinating, but I mean, we're talking about like, this is like 10th record, right? I mean, Funkadelic's an institution at this point. And then you have, and then there's like a resurgence when like, you know, Ice Cube does the, you know, samples it on like his song, like, you know, and then like a whole new generation of folks get to find out about it and what have you. And it just, it's one of those songs that just kind of, I'm thinking, it just takes on a life of its own. It just kind of.
Yeah, I used to play it over and over, that's for sure. It was just kind of, that record kicks it. This is guy Al Perkins in Detroit, who's the older guy, but he used to say a record kicks his own ass. You know, you play it so much, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we found him, the record was playing, you know, like, wake him up.
Well, and there's a lot of, and just, yeah, and the record itself, I mean, like, who says a funk band can't play rock? You know, that's a ripper as well. That was one that was like, hell yeah, this is really my stuff.
whoever wrote the lyrics to that, and I got Junie, I believe he did the track and the lyrics, but they gave me some writers on it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, right on.
So he's like, I believe that's, see, he was definitely, his catalog is very extensive too, if anybody checks that out. But he had a lot of writing styles, and I guess that he wrote it for me, you know. That's, you know, because he just like, he just handed it over to me. I was like, that's cool, you know. Or he wrote it for us. That's just, I don't know, it's for me, but they made it sound like, you did such a great solo, Mike. We're gonna give you writers.
So. Yeah, it's well, and that's something where sometimes like a solo or something can be so intrinsic to the song that you can't think of it without. And I feel that. That's not just true for guitar. Like, you know, drums, like, always get the short shrift. You know, keyboard, like, it's like things where you can't think of it without it. And that's one of them where it's like, that's, you should have got a writing credit on that. That's awesome. So that's, so you're still, even when this is going on, you're still a pretty young cat compared to everyone else, right? Like, I mean, like, do you get used to the circus pretty quickly?
I gotta wear some earplugs, you know, at times, you know, just to kind of find some peace, because it's a lot of, you know, some younger
carrying on.
Yeah, you know, everybody's just into a thing, and I don't say that I stay super focused all the time, but it's hard for me to, just kick it, you know, when I'm thinking about playing a show or a gig, but especially when I'm not sure of what we're going to be playing. You know, like, I'm not the guy Collins, you know, like the quarterback. It's like, okay, we're gonna do this. And it's yours. We're gonna do. And it's like, I know I should know just from repetition, but a lot of times you throw a curve, and it's like, I don't know the whole catalog. Like,
yeah, you're like, what?
So if anybody ever sees me just not playing, it's I don't want to fuck up, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to hit the wrong notes. Or usually I carry some headphones with the amplifiers in it, you know.
Yeah.
And if it's something I can't remember exactly, and if I have enough time, I can learn it. You know, I can reevaluate it. Whatever.
Well, because there's probably certain songs you know you're going to be doing that one. You know, okay, you know that. But then it's like, what's this one? Yeah. Like, what's this? Which one? Yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, that one. Okay, right on, you know. But and is that something where, how far ahead of time is that planned?
Man.
Not enough?
Not enough. So I just found out today, it's a gig that, supposed to jump off, but we get like information usually at the last minute, you know, and we might not even know it until you get on stage.
Oh man!
You know, because George doesn't even know himself.
That's what to tell him.
That's what I mean. He doesn't think, but he if he feels something because he's reading the audience. Which I never knew.
Oh, okay.
Anybody really did, but you know, I guess that's if you had an instrument, I guess the audience would be his instrument.
Yeah, right.
In a sense, and then he figured out, you know, like, oh, I'll do this one, or you know, I might do Alice in My Fantasies, or you know, or some. I want to know if it's good to you, some old funkadelic. You know, it might be some old heads in the audience, or he may sense something, and yeah, it depends on where we're at. Yeah, he'll choose a song, or maybe somebody will be it something we did at Soundcheck that might click a memory, like, hey, let's do that.
I remember it. Yeah, right. Okay, so, well, and I guess that can be the fun part of being a band with such a deep history and a deep catalog.
Sure.
But also, you know, if you don't have any advance notes and you don't know where you're at, like, that could be kind of harrowing at the same time. You'd be like,
I should be probably more at it than I am with that. Like, I, you know, maybe us talking about it, it's making me rethink. You just kind of, I need to go try to go over everything in the catalog.
Yeah. I mean, stay up on all of it.
Just let it play in this long loop.
Let's keep it going like a museum art piece or something, where it's always playing in a room.
That's playing, man. It's like real low in the background.
Exactly. Yeah. Just turn it up, turn it down as needed. Yeah, I know this one.
Yeah, but I kind of try to, I haven't been practicing as much as I should, but it's always practice. But If I'm practicing to a point, then I'm like, okay, I could pick it up by ear or something, you know?
Yeah.
So I can do that. But there's some parts that are just, you know, a little bit too fast and intricate, you know, to be like, okay, I can't just ear that out. You know, I can't hear that.
Yeah.
I can't hear that one time. It's like, oh, yeah, I got it.
Right. Some things are going to be easier than others. And some are like, well, I feel like I know how this one goes. Yeah. It's probably something like this. And some it's like, nope, got nothing.
Yeah. Sometimes it just go like right past it. It's making it more, you know, difficult than what it is. You know, it's a lot of that. And you're on stage, it seems like you hit all the wrong notes.
Yeah. Right,
when you hit the right one, you'd be like, oh no, I thought.
Is that it? This fella, the band Mudhoney, Steve Turner, the great guitarist from Mudhoney, talked about, he used to hit, he hit wrong notes, but he would just slide into the right one and make it sound like it was up there.
Yep.
And he's like,
that would have played twice, you know.
Like, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, I meant to do that. Yeah. So it was jazz, baby.
That's what funk really is.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like it doesn't have to be perfect, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It just be that little off, you know, that off thing.
Well, and when you're with a bigger ensemble too, there's a little more cover.
Sure, sure.
Whereas, you know, if it's a power trio, you know, Jimmy's, you know, oh, he dicked that one up. Like, you know, we're all going to know. I mean, not that he ever would, but.
Sure. Sure. Well, Conan, this has been great. I'm going to, we can talk some more. I might have to take a break.
No, that's fine. We can wrap this up. I do want to be, so the two things I wanted to mention, Into the Public Domain. Okay. Thought that was a cool record. You know, you can find that michaelhampton.bandcamp.com.
And
King Kong is the new one, man. So yeah. That's it's a cool record. Anything folks should know about this, I'll link to it in the show notes and that so people can check them out, of course.
Man, there's so many. They keep throwing different things at me. It's like Joe Niccolo and Phil Artist. They did some things on there. Phil Kagi did something. But yeah, it's a little bit too much for me to gather right now.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm just saying I want folks to know about it because, you know, it's fine to talk about the old stuff, but you're actively doing stuff right now. And I think that's interesting. And I think that's cool. And I think that's something that folks should be paying attention to. So I'll play us out on one of the... Well, I'll probably play us out on one of the two for those. Dude, Michael Anthony, it's been so great talking to you, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. I hope you'll come on again sometime and regale us with more tales.
Okay, I got a few more stories. All right, thank you, Conan.
All right.
Conan Neutron, that's right.
Last thing, man. This is the only canned question I ever ask. You can choose to interpret this however you like. Why do you do what you do?
Oh, I believe it's like my purpose in life, like this. I mean, I don't get too spiritual and cosmic, but it just seems like this is what I was made to do. It wasn't sports. I tried football, basketball, tennis. You know, you tried a lot of things, and then one day I picked up the guitar and started messing around with it and just felt like it was a natural thing. And my grandma, you know, one of my grandmoms, you know, she said that I was her musician. And it's kind of one of those things where it feels like it's a predestined type of thing. It's where I picked up the guitar and visited my aunt and uncle in Landover, Maryland. And then I went back to Cleveland. And then I ended up doing this. My first show in Landover, Maryland, and I had dreams about it. And then saying all that is saying like I really don't know, but I think we're all here for a purpose. And I thought I found a little niche. I thought I was good at, and I love music. You know, I've been listening to it since I was. Just watching the records turn around in the record player before I even picked up a guitar. So yeah, it was just my purpose. You know, it's kind of all I know how to do. But and I'm still learning. So yeah, why do I do what I do? It's for all of us, really. You know, just like cause we all want in it. You know, so. It's like my part, you know, somebody's listening and I guess I get to play, you know, yeah, I get to play and I'll just try to do the best I can, you know, if it'll bring some people out of some things that they're going through, listen, you know, I do it for that, you know, we got to take some of the, you just absorb some of whatever's going on, you know, and then if you can't talk it out, which is, I have a problem kind of getting it out in words, but it's kind of communicating to a lot of people, but not really saying not through words, just through notes, you know. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
All right, my man.
Appreciate you, Michael. Take care, bud.
All right. Talk to you later.
There goes Kid Funkadelic himself. What a good time. What a good time that is. What a great conversation. Hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm going to play you something off of this King Kong record. It's good stuff. You can hear it. You can pick it up on the Bandcamp, all the normal places that you would pick things up. Let's do the Morning in the Jungle is what we're going to do here.
Thank you.
All right, a little butt-to-butt resuscitation there by a little band called Funkadelic. Parliament Funkadelic, P-Funk All-Stars, what have you, the entire
can you hear me now?
P-Funk Extended Universe, Cinematic Universe. And, of course, before that, played a song off of the new record, King Kong, which you can find a link to. Check it out. That's new stuff from Michael Hampton and then collaborators. Really good stuff. Also, check out the Public Domain record. Into the Public Domain. That's also good. You can go michaelhampton.bandcamp.com for that. Okay. Well, there you go. That was a good time. I hope you enjoyed that talk with Michael Hampton. Of course, the name of the show is Code Neutron's Protonic Reversal. Thank you so very much for listening to it. You can find the shows usually Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live, YouTube, and Twitch, podcast later, everywhere, always free, no ads, no sponsors, no kidding. And protonicreversal.com, of course, yeah, patreon.com/protonicreversal for the Patreon. $1 a month gives you advance access, keeps the lights on in this joint, and keeps... Keeps a lot of stuff happening, so deeply appreciate it for all that. Thanks for folks liking the show, subscribing on your platform of choice, you know, sharing around. Helps beat back those almighty algorithmic overlords, and I do appreciate that. I've got liking, subscribing, leaving a review, all that stuff helps. Yeah. A couple more good episodes coming up for a head out on tour. Dave Katchin's coming up next. So stay tuned for that. Yeah, thanks for listening. And, you know, as always, stay safe out there. Microphone turns sound into stay cool. And check it later.
Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on Earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the... See on the radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Is it really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day, radio. Can you hear me now? Emergency!